Very nice to have you all here at the second day of IGEO, right? And we're going to have a nice fireside chat discussion about hospitality for a better future. Our discussion today will be about shaping sustainability with purpose and with action in the hospitality industry. We're going to have four panelists on stage, but before we get there, I just want to tell you two, three very brief things about B-Lab so you understand why we put those four people together today. And my name is Giovanna. I'm the Communications and Community Manager at the B-Lab Switzerland Foundation. And B-Lab is a non-profit Swiss foundation. Our aim is to really transform the global economy for a more regenerative system. And, well, that's because we really believe in an inclusive, in an equitable and regenerative economy, and our mission is to transform the way business is done today. We believe that every business can be a force for good. Very briefly, what we do, we are active in many dimensions, from programs and certification to policy change to education and research and to impact management. And what I'm going to be focusing on from this 16 areas is the B Corp and the Swiss Triple Impact Program. That's what we are best known for. We are known for the B Corp certification, which is an international movement of companies. And here in Switzerland, we also have the Swiss Triple Impact Program. Why I'm focusing on those two, it's because our panelists today, they are all part of our B ecosystem. They are all part of these two programs and certifications. So just very briefly about the B Corp, maybe some of you have seen the B with the circle around. That's a certification already quite well known. We have more than 10,000 B Corps in the world certified. Here in Switzerland, more than 150. Companies that are B Corp headquartered in Switzerland, but also more than 650 B Corps active in the country. And all of them have one common goal, to really use business as a force for good. And on the Swiss Triple Impact Initiative, it's an initiative that we created mostly for SMEs, to support SMEs, to combine their goals with the SDGs, so to create a sustainability strategy. And it's mostly focused on SMEs, but by now we also have a lot of large enterprises that have joined our program. And this initiative is really focused. We have a lot of sectoral pathways. Our focus is really on collective action. I'm sure a lot of you here in this room today face challenges, especially in the hospitality industry, that you cannot tackle alone. And that's why we focus on the sectoral pathways, on these tackling systemic issues together. Some companies that you may know that are certified or that are part of our Swiss Triple Impact program, so it's already out there, also very much so in the hospitality industry. But enough about us. I'm very excited to get into the challenges and the best practices that our speakers have to share with us today. So I'd like to welcome on stage the four of you. So Arthur Brault is the founder of Chef Gourmet. We also have Pascal Bieri, the co-founder and member of the executive board at Planted. Mike Hackett, founder and CEO of BeWater. And Sophie Bosshardt, Head of Sustainability at Transgourmet. Welcome. So like I said, our chat today will be about hospitality for the future, for a better future. And what we'll try to do is we're going to try to bring concrete examples, your best practices, but also your challenges on how to have sustainability, not just as a side quest in your companies, but as really a part of your business model, a driving force of your business model. When we talk about sustainability, I think, and also especially in Switzerland, I think something that comes to mind very quickly is local production, right? We here in Switzerland, it's quite big to know where something comes from that you are consuming, and I guess it's also becoming big around the world. So I'd like to start on this topic of local production, and maybe I'll start with you, Arthur. So you are the founder of Chef Gourmet. Chef Gourmet is a supplier of premium bakery products, right, for the restaurants, cafes, hospitality in general. And you recently made a bold move, which was to move your production that was in France to Switzerland. And now you're working closer to your end consumer. My question then is, what motivated that shift to bring the production to Switzerland? And what challenges or surprises came along the way of producing locally?
So the idea actually was, so we've been distributing Bridor products. So Bridor is one of the biggest company in bread and viennoiserie premium product. And we've been distributing Bridor for 15 years. So before that, I was working for Bridor 5 years. Then I've been the distributor during 15 years. And just after the COVID, it was a time we had the first certification of B Corp. And we started thinking about trying to reduce our footprint, and came in mind to try to relocate the production from France to Switzerland. And so the idea came. It took a while. And just the main issue actually was that Bridor was roughly 70% of our turnover. So we couldn't make it against Bridor because it was just impossible. But when I talked to Bridor about my project of producing in Switzerland, then came up the idea of doing a Bridor Suisse. And this is what we did actually, so it takes about 2 years. And we just started last month, really, the first production of viennoiserie and bread in Switzerland. So we are based in Cousset, which is on Canton Fribourg, just near Payerne. And yeah, one of the biggest challenge, of course, is the price of the raw material. Just to give you an idea, the butter, which is really a very important product, raw material for us, the butter is 5 euros in Europe, France, Germany, whatever. It's 15 francs in Switzerland. So so you have some import tax, which makes it a little bit lower, but the gap is huge. So you have to make sure that your customers will be willing to pay the premium for the Swiss product.
Yeah, and I guess it was a big thing that you've been working with Bridor for years, right? So I'm sure that made it easier to make that transition.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, I've been working for Bridor during 5 years, with Bridor during 15 years. Yeah. So, of course, you build a very tight relationship, and it helps when you go to in this kind of projects together. Yeah.
Along the same lines of local production, I'd like to pass it on to you, Mike, because what B-Water does is, well, you install on-site filtration systems to replace single-used bottles, which means you bring the local production of bottled water to restaurants and to cafes and to hotels, right? So local production is indeed kilometer zero and actually meter zero. So your model was built on that, your business model was built on that, and we know that hospitality is a lot about guest experience. So could you share with us a story of a partner that has made the shift with you, maybe also focusing a bit on guest experience, and what you learned along the way together of introducing these filtration systems and how also that is for the guest, for the consumer?
Sure, with pleasure. So first of all, we are a water brand and more than a brand than a filtration system. And yes, B-Water at the concept is you can produce locally. Locally means in every restaurant or in every big city if we are talking about bottled water. And so where we innovated a lot is to make, to premiumize your tap water, to make it the best water you can drink by providing a filtration system to start with that take away all the impurities but keep the minerality in, but also bringing something more. So we have three different products, and I'll come to the example at the end. The first product is filtration system that you install in the restaurant or hotels or bar that on top of filtering would activate the water. So water that is activated is what's happening in the natural water source when it's coming out of the source. We do the same at the nozzle. So that's one innovation that we brought, Swiss patented innovation. So very proud to be Swiss. It has a mechanical watchmaking type of innovation as well. The second innovation that we brought is to take it a bit further, only for high gastronomy. We have an active carafe that takes the electromagnetic noise around us and gives even a further acceleration of the water molecule, and this impacts your taste. So it's the first water that in a gastronomy setting would impact whatever you taste next to it. And the third innovation, which is maybe the biggest today in scale, is that we develop a circular bottle. So this bottle would be used probably for the next 10 years, coming back and forth, and is bottled in the big cities. So several examples. One is maybe Bern, where we have our bottling facility at the Bern Expo. So inside the Bern Expo, we bottle bee water at the expo for being used for the trade fairs, but also for all the restaurants in Bern. And maybe the best example to use where all the three innovations are coming to place is in places like Caviar House. So Caviar House would have a system in the bar, a bottled water for people that sit in the on the tables, and a very exclusive caviar and water experience with Active Plus, Bee Water Active Plus. And we have the same, we're developing the same with people like Mandarin Hotel and so on.
Yeah, wow. Okay. To think that water can may have that big of an influence on what you taste at a restaurant experience is crazy. So what I'm hearing from you is that you're bringing innovation, you're bringing this change in the local aspect into well your value chain, and that of course has the power to reshape the industry. You are reshaping the industry, both of you. You're making sustainability very tangible also for the consumer at the end with the local production. But I would also like to talk about making sustainability measurable. I guess that's the accountability topic, which is so big as sustainability becomes, or not just becomes, but is a buzzword and reporting and everything. It's such a big part of the puzzle. So how do we ensure that all those bold actions that you are doing, they are also part of the value chain and they're not just singular to you? That brings me to you maybe, Sophie. So you're the head of sustainability at Transgourmet Switzerland's leading wholesale supplier, right, for the hospitality industry, for restaurants, and for retail as well. Part of Coop Group, and as part of Coop Group, I have to say you have very ambitious sustainability goals, which is great. One of them including a 42% emission reduction by 2030. And I can imagine that managing data and measurements across such a big network can really not be easy. So I'd like to ask you, what's the biggest challenge? And also, where have you seen the most encouraging progress so far in gathering data to make sustainability measurable?
Yeah, thanks for the question. So I think the biggest challenge is really data. So you need to know where you are to have the initial situation to really do your measures and see that the goals are achieved in the end. So this was really the biggest challenge to get the data, and then you need to evaluate what data is needed at all. And we have CO2 emissions in delivery, in warming our buildings or cooling our buildings, with the recycling and so on. So we really had to have a look at what are all our processes within our company and how do we get the data. So we need to have a good collaboration with all the departments in our company, so really communicate what do we need to have a common sense of the data we need, but also with the suppliers, because we are not only emitting CO2 in our own company, but also along the supply chain. So we need to evaluate everything beforehand and after our own processes. So yeah, we also need to work with suppliers in the end to achieve our goals. But for the data, you also need good tools how to gather the data. But I have to admit, we work a lot with Excel still. But yeah, it's also a challenge to somehow get a tool maybe in future to get the data and validate it in a good way. Yeah, and the lesson learned is really how to increase, yeah, thank you, implement the measures and to talk with the internal and external partners mm-hmm. to achieve all your goals. And this is really, if you first need to implement the knowledge or to assess where everyone is standing and then to gather a common knowledge on the topic mm-hmm. and then collaborate in the end.
So I'm getting a lot of collaboration, stakeholder orchestration, internal and external from you. So with your team, which is not a small team, right? Talking about Transgourmet, but also with your external partners. And is that working out for you also with the external partners to get the data from them? Because I can imagine not all of them have the same drive for sustainability as you.
At the moment, we're working a lot with assumptions across, for example, our assortment. Mm-hmm. And we need to work on improving our data and to also maybe get data from our suppliers beforehand. And so we have to talk to them and to have a look that we can have the same data, because everyone at the moment is working with assumptions. There are no regulation on that in the moment, which is also a challenge. There are a lot of programs at the moment, also with Coop together and our suppliers, mm-hmm. Such that we have a common emission calculation in the end. And then also do the measures together.
So you talked about assumptions, and after immediately went, yes. Would you like to react?
I think it's a real challenge today. A lot of us are working with assumptions because there is no regulation. And one of our big success factors, I think, for all the BILAB community for the coming years will be to have some regulations and recognition of the companies which are truly involved into this kind of movement, because we need to move fast, but we have no support from the state, from the regulation, from the public sector.
It's back to us.
It's on you.
Point taken. Thank you. And maybe let's move to you, Pascal, because, you're the co-founder of Planted. Planted is a Zurich food tech startup redefining protein in the industry, not just the hospitality industry, but in the food industry. And you guys do it with very few additives in the cleanest way possible, already to ditch what other alternatives have heard in the past about being an alternative to meat or to protein. You really rely a lot on data, and if you buy a Planted package on the supermarket, you see how much you're saving in terms of water, in terms of emissions. So your biggest competitor is the meat industry, and I can imagine that then relying on data is a big argument for you, right? So my question to you, which then I would like to open to the rest of you, but let's start with Pascal, is what's been the hardest part of making those metrics actually useful for your hospitality partners?
A good question. Since I'm not sure how much hospitality partners care these days about sustainability measures and the aspects of what their choice of protein leaves at the table and in this world, I think. Sustainability is an important one because it is one of the four pillars why we founded Planted. I think there's always something around animal welfare that is a good reason why you shouldn't eat protein from animal sources. There's human nutrition. So many billions are spent on healthcare because we eat too many animal proteins, yet we subsidize it on the other hand. So I think when we talk policy and government, then I could go for ages. And then there's obviously, the efficiency of a supply chain, right? We grow plant-based proteins, we choose in over 90% of the cases to feed them into animals to then feed to us animal proteins, which is not just unsustainable, but really just inefficient. Mm-hmm. So at Planted, we wanted to tackle this by building a brand, building a kind of a movement, but doing this with product, being super transparent about how less impact our products has on this planet than animal counterparts, because in the end, it is a protein, a fully bioavailable plant-based protein, in our case fermented, even better for digestion, etc. But I'm asking myself a little bit, and maybe that's then the question, the philosophical one, to solve for the next half an hour or years. How much our consumers care about that. Mm-hmm. Yes, we can call for government interaction, but I think, and take this with a lot of love, but I think as long as we say, hey, we only look at our own trucks, our own cooling systems, and how nice the energy sources are, and we don't care what products we actually put in our products, mm-hmm. Local butter is better than European butter, I get that, but best would be, you know, from a sustainability perspective, clearly plant-based butter. Or how much animal foods do I supply to, or animal proteins do I supply to my customers, and how important is it to me as a leading distributor that my scope 3 will have somewhat of a better outlook on this planet than it does currently. And I'm not sure how honest this conversation always is mm-hmm. these days in the boardrooms.
Do you share that? I see a lot of nodding. So is it similar to you that you're also not sure to what extent your customer is worried about that, if it's something that's more on your side, but or actually the four of you, you are examples of companies really doing the extra mile. Do you also do it because you see a demand for it? Maybe let's dive into this a bit.
I think we cannot work alone on that. So we need our customers to work with us. We have assortment of everything, also plant-based assortment, but we can't force them to buy it. So it's really also, yeah, in our society, we need to get more of this maybe know-how, or I don't know, maybe that we care more about our environment and for sustainability, and then I think we can achieve more than just we as a company ourselves.
I think there is an issue of education, especially in new categories. I think we are probably two new categories, so you need to educate a lot, because there is consumer to educate, but also stakeholders to educate. In the case of BeWater, we see, for example, the hotel industry has a lot of sustainability benchmarks and KPIs. So all of a sudden, this led to take away plastic bottles from the rooms. But still, it's okay in a hotel to have maybe a good filtration or bottled water, locally bottled in the rooms. But in a restaurant in Dubai or Singapore, you can have water imported from Italy. Doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
So we need to educate still a lot. And I think regulators. There's an issue also of how much regulation can come in.
Yeah.
Because polluting needs to be somehow taxed.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but just to give a positive path, we begin to see some movements. And I have two examples in mind. So, of course, we do work with suppliers which are B Corp or STI. So we came from 2 to 8 suppliers which are either STI or B Corps. And we begin to have customers which get involved. So an example is Eldora, which was going into the certifications. They might be certified in the coming weeks, hopefully. And so the relationship came from a supplier to a partner. So we were a supplier and we became a partner because they really needed us, you know, to go and to help them to work on the B Corp certification. So that changed a lot. Another example that I had just this week is the Sandoz Foundation. They have very nice hotels in Lausanne. And we were talking with the purchaser, with the chef for many months. And just on Wednesday during the STI, we were talking about B Corp and so on. And I got in contact with the sustainable director, and she came to me and she said, during your speech, I was just sending an SMS to my purchasing, asking, are you working with Bridor and Chef Gourmet? And the guy was, yeah, we're talking together. And she went like, okay, go. And then the purchaser gave it back to me and say, okay, it's a sustainable department, is with us, will make everything a lot easier. So we begin to see some movements which are very interesting.
I really like this point you're making. And I mean, I know you work with a lot of suppliers that are B Corp, that are Swiss Triple Impact participants. And then, like you said, they're becoming also partners, not just suppliers. But ultimately, it's also a business decision that you make to work with them, right? It's not just because they have the label that makes, yeah, now I'm going to work with that company. So could you and maybe the rest of you talk a little bit more about why is it that you also go for these companies that share the purpose, not just because they share the mentality, but what is it business-wise that makes you want to work with them? Anybody? Yeah?
No, I mean, when you're working between B Corps or STI, you already share a lot of values. Just, I mean, and you gain a lot of time and, a lot of purposes. You know you're on the same line. And they make things a lot easier. And you trust people, I think, a lot faster. So everything gets easier. In the end, you need to have good products. You need to have prices which are not crazy. I mean, everything will come back. But at least you share something together.
Yeah.
To me, it's all about authenticity. A handshake is a handshake. I know we're a startup, scale up, whatever. But having authentic partners and hey, if it's a label or not, you can discuss that all day. I'm not sure. I'm not the biggest fan of it. But at least it gives you a certain common ground. And and then in the end, you can tell pretty quickly whether another company is authentic about their values, whether they act on them, or whether it's just a label printed somewhere.
I think hospitality and being B2B, it's a question of trust. You're doing long-term relation with a customer, and I think B Corp and the community of creating trust, being transparent, being more than just a product or a service, and this comes well with the label.
Good. No, very, very good to hear. So again, I'm hearing trust, I'm hearing collaboration, I'm hearing long-term. So this seems to be a common theme since the beginning of this panel. And I would now like to go into scaling, because we started on local production, we talked about measurements, and now let's talk about scaling. And I'm looking at the two of you in the middle. I mean, you both are startup, scale up, and now becoming bigger businesses.
He's bigger.
So my question is, how do you make sure that you grow, but not at the expense of your purpose? How do you keep that, especially when you expand into newer markets? Maybe, Mike, you just you're in that phase right now, going into bigger markets. Would you like to take that first?
Sure, happy. We raised about 40 million a year ago in order to scale up the activity. But at the end of the day, it's the same activity, but in more cities. So the formula is the same. If we open a bottling facility in Bern and next week we open in Marrakesh, it's the same unit, same way of approaching the market. What it does take is building more systems, making sure that you can replicate it as you grow, educate more. It's difficult to bring B Water values to a Chinese consumer. You know, they don't drink water, they drink tea. How do you relate that? So there is a lot of adaptation, but what I'm very, very, very pleased and even amazed is that if you go to North America or Asia, people get the mission. They get the mission that water should be local, water should come from your own city, and here is a company that gives you the solution of how. And so that gives me a lot of joy and fuels the purpose.
Great. Same question to you, Pascal. How do you grow, not at the expense of your sustainability goals?
In our case, I think sustainability is always at the very core of what we do. So my focus the last few years wasn't how do we grow not giving up on the purpose, but how do we keep or making our product better while we scale? Mm-hmm. yeah, I can only applaud our technical team and my co-founders from the food science side and the engineering side, where we're able to produce now 5 tons a day of steak versus 2 years ago 10 kilos.
Wow.
At a better quality and a much better price point. And I think that was, in our case, in all honesty, the biggest challenge and focus to scale production, to scale impact. I think the other part, the purpose, I think that's very much culture. Mm-hmm. Do you bend over backwards at the first opportunity where somebody offers you the unethical solution to something, or I think that's all about culture. And to us, I mean, you're a founder, I'm a founder, this is the reason why we did this, right? I hope corporates can keep the same. You're a founder also, sorry. But this is the reason why we did this, to not having to bend over backwards and make all the compromises.
Yeah.
That often happen in a corporate environment, I'd say.
Mm-hmm. How is it for you, Soph?
Compromise come if you don't have a brand. If you have a brand, then you need, I think we have a brand. Mm-hmm. You need to stay very clear what is the brand standing for. Mm-hmm. In the case of Bwater, we had a lot of temptations. Can we co-brand the bottle? Can we do things? And it's a choice. Mm-hmm. And you need to stick to a choice and be clear. In our case, we don't reboot.
clear message. and for you, Sophie, I mean, they just said, you know, there are three founders. They came into business with that purpose and with that reason. But Transgourmet is at a larger scale, and you're not necessarily scaling up at the moment, but you're still dealing with, huge revenues and products and tons and tons of products. How do you keep purpose really in the center of everything?
Yeah, of course. We grow, but also we have the chance to improve our assortment, for example, or to be a good partner with others to work on such sustainability programs. For example, we're working as a member, foundation member, and board member with United Against Waste. We're working together with the Bundesamt für Umwelt, BAFU, for the action plan reducing food waste for 50% until 2030. So we have a lot of action groups in different sectors like production, gastronomy, retail, and wholesale. And we see that we have all the same like challenges, also again with data, but also with the measures. Mm-hmm. And in these working groups, we got ideas how to work together, how to solve a problem. And then there were other working groups out of these and with working from all the companies across the supply chain to tackle a problem. And this is really impressive to see what was within 2 or 3 years what we achieved really across the whole supply chain, and that everyone is working on that even if they see challenges. And we really see that we can only work within the limits of our customers. So we can only do things that are accepted by our customers, because otherwise we do it and then it is left out, or we create even more food waste. So this is a challenge. We need also include society, also the needs of our society. But we are on a good way. Also at Transgourmet, we have the goal to all the products that we bought, all food, needs to be consumed by humans by 99.5%, and we overachieved our goal already, and we're improving. We're working with our partner Tischlein Deck Dich to donate the food that we can't sell anymore, but it is still good, so we donate it. And this is really valuable, and it makes hope that we can achieve something actually.
So then, in your case, you also look for those partnerships at a larger scale with governments, like you mentioned with BAFO. I mean, a 50% food waste reduction by 2030 is quite a big one. And I'm assuming that the two of you also deal with, to some extent, with some concerns around food waste, right? Would you like to react on that and how you deal with it, maybe Arthur?
Actually, on food waste, we don't have a lot of impacts. It's more about our customers. But we've been working on the reduction of our footprint for a while now. And yeah, we managed together with our transport partner, which is quite very important in this scope, of course, the scope 3, was to make a partnership together in order to reduce, and we reduced for 30% our footprint impact. So yeah, we need some goals, we need some data to focus on, and yeah, it's quite a...
I think the food waste that we directly see is the one that we are directly responsible of. Mm-hmm. I guess mostly in the factory. That hurts on a lot of sides. So there's a lot of like focus to minimize that. I think we're below 1%. But then in all honesty, obviously, it's also about forecasting on our side. We have a supply chain that where we pasteurize all our products at the end of our production facility, so we can maximize our shelf life in a cool environment where most retail products are sold at, and maximize also on a frozen environment where most of our food service products are sold at. And that gives us a lot of flexibility in like changing a misforecasted product from one channel to another. But yes, hey, I think it's probably more so on you and than the end consumer to have a big, big focus on that and making sure that food that went through all the steps, imagine what it needs to happen to create food on a table and then it's being wasted. It's just...
We have an angle on waste as well.
Please.
I mean, this bottle, this is an asset that can be used for 10 years. If we don't get it back, it's lost. So happily, we live in a country that knows what is a returned logistics. But many countries don't. And when we come to a country like UAE or Singapore, we need to educate that these bottles are ours and should come back. Otherwise, it's a waste. The worst bottle of water you can serve is not PET, is bottle in glass that you use one time. So imagine you are again in Singapore and you have a bottle from Italy, I don't say the name of the brand, in glass one time. That's the worst. Better use plastic. But so we try to educate on not wasting the resources we have.
Mm-hmm. And how do you do that? Is it with the depot or?
Yeah. Unfortunately, it's by taxing.
Yeah,
for now. Say it's cost you, it costs $5 or $2 or whatever, and if you don't give it back, then I'll charge you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, very. You need to educate.
Yeah, that's a very clear example. Maybe back to you, Sophie, on this food waste target. Could you give us some concrete examples of what Transgourmet is doing, what you've changed or implemented to meet that target that you've set with BAFO?
Yeah, what we really worked on was, again, data. So we didn't know what was thrown away or what was really donated. So we improved our software so that we can track what was donated and then we can really measure what was food safe and what was food loss. Yeah, but also we see examples in retail, and some of them we did before, like we can freeze our food, some of them that are allowed from regulation. Then we can freeze them and we can still sell them or we can donate them. And retail is doing that as well, but they started later because they saw, okay, it's possible, we need to try that also, and it worked.
Yeah. And with you, Arthur, is freezing also something that you work with? I mean, just on Wednesday, we received freshly baked Ghiblis at our event in Bern. They were definitely not frozen, but is that what you do to avoid food waste to some extent, to
So actually, all our products are frozen. It's the only way, you know, to not add conservatives. Mm-hmm. It's the best way to keep the products. Of course, it does have an impact. We have to. So now we're trying to go on new new energies, new new chambers to freeze the products with a lower consumption of electricity and so on. There's a lot to do, and it's moving very, very fast. But the good thing with frozen products is that you can manage for the restaurant, for the hotels, they can manage through the day their consumptions, and of course it reduces a lot the food waste. Yeah.
Good. We're reaching the end of the panel, so I have one last question for all of you, and then I'll get your answers, which is, what is one action that every hospitality business, those of you who are here and the rest of this huge fair, so what is one action that hospitality businesses can take tomorrow, next week, to move towards real sustainability, real impact?
Maybe I can start.
Please.
I think it's really helpful to start measuring food waste, what is occurring, like in the kitchen, what is coming back on the from the customers, and then you really. It's not only good for the environment, but you really can save money with that, which is also important, I think, in this case.
Cost saving, absolutely.
My case, very easy. Consume bee water. No, consume local.
Consume local.
If you have a choice, and there are choices, favorize local, then transport it.
There are always choices. You're 100% right. Hey, my pitch is super easy. take one menu item that you make with a beef currently, change it with a planted steak, and you're saving yourselves 97% CO2 emissions. Happy to help if I
wow.
can.
Great.
So, yeah, measurements is, I think, the most important, because if you really want to focus on where you can change things, you have to measure first. And yeah. A lot of people, a lot of hotels, restaurants, they just don't have any idea what the impact is. So that's the first point. And, of course, try to work locally. I mean, we made the move, so if they could make it as well, it would be very helpful.
You took the first step, so the rest
exactly.
of them could
we're
run.
Exactly, we're waiting for them. Yep.
Great. Well, so what I'm hearing is back to the points that we covered in this panel, right? Consume locally and measure, and for that, there is a stakeholder orchestration needed. You need to get the data not just on your side, but also on your supplier side, maybe on your entire value chain, so also on the downstream side of what happens next, right? Thank you so much. That was really insightful. Let's give it up to our panel. And maybe on a final note, what I'd like to say is, what we talked about here today was a lot about collaborations, right? It was all the time talking about this, the stakeholders, how we need them, how you have long-term partnerships that really support, how bringing production locally builds trust. And I'm sure all of you here face similar challenges in the hospitality industry. So what if we could all get together, because there's so much knowledge in this panel, there's so much knowledge, I'm sure, in this room, in this entire fair, and then the idea is, what if we could get together and to share this knowledge, share these best practices to create something that would really change the hospitality industry? That's already happening. B-Lab Switzerland is partnering with the EHL, the hospitality school in Lausanne, to create a hospitality coalition in Switzerland. We are going to be launching that very soon, and would like all of you to be part of it. So if you're interested, scan the QR code so that we can really make this a collective movement, a collective action, because all of these challenges, supplier, measurements, regulations, you cannot tackle alone. We need to tackle it as an industry, as a movement. So thank you so much. I hope to see all of you at the Hospitality Coalition meetings soon. Great.